Welcome back. I'm joined now by Mr. Darren Sinnan, market commentator of Admiral Markets, and Mr. Richard Hunter, the head of equities at Hargreaves Lansdown. Darren, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
How the devil are you, sir?
Yeah, very well, thank you, Nick.
Monday morning, raring to go. I know you're busy at the moment.
We are busy, but in a good way. So, raring to go, you're quite right.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay, well, you've sent a huge amount of slides over on Japan, so I guess we better get stuck straight into these. After 6 months of mega QE, what now for Japan? What a great question.
Well, it's 2 weeks away, the actual six-month anniversary of the Bank of Japan ramping up its QE programme, and it seems an appropriate point to just have a look and see, you know, with all that money flooding into the Japanese economy, what, if anything, has actually been achieved. So we've got a few slides which will hopefully shed some light on that. So if we can move on to the first one. So just to put the whole thing into perspective, so in case anyone's in any doubt, the Bank of Japan is committed to 80 trillion yen per annum of QE. So that's roughly 6.5 trillion yen per month. It's a staggering figure, $60 to $65 billion, something like that, per month. And I just wanted to show the viewers what that means in terms of the Bank of Japan balance sheet, which has just rocketed. And remember, this chart is what, a 6 to 9 month chart. So from the summer of 2014 to date, it's stuck on the best part of 80 trillion yen. And then to further, because these numbers are so big, it's almost hard to get your head around them, even for people in finance. And then to put that into further perspective, the debt to GDP ratio is the chart on the right hand side. Japan, the massive black.
That can't be black right, bar. Can it?
And well, yeah, it is, and that's the EU. And obviously, the EU debt to GDP ratio may change, but Japan's is madness. When you also think that most of that debt is actually in here on the Bank of Japan balance sheet. But Bank of Japan is by far and away the biggest buyer of Japanese government debt. I think I've read as much as up to 90% of Japanese government debt is hoovered up by the Bank of Japan at the moment. Doesn't strike me as being a very healthy situation, and I can't imagine that the debt to GDP ratio can go on being inflated forever, or indeed the central bank balance sheet, despite the fact that Kuroda came out, the Bank of Japan governor, this morning to say that they're going to stick with it, and they're going to stick with it until the inflation target gets to 2%. So we'll see a little bit more about that as we move through. So if we can move on to the next slide. So I think this is, one of the charts that I find very telling. So this is a chart of annual GDP growth in Japan from 2012 to date. And you can see it's been very inconsistent. The early part of 2012, we had a couple of consecutive quarters of growth, or period 6 months of growth, but then it was very patchy again across 2012, 2013. Again, some encouraging signs 13, 14, but since late 2013, basically GDP growth has gone negative again. And the black line here, for the avoidance of doubt, is what analysts are forecasting for growth.
But with all that money going into the system, why is this going negative?
Because you're getting, unfortunately, a very diminishing return. And I'm not sure that the money really is going into the system. I think that's the point. They're buying debt. They're buying now, starting to buy other assets, which is possibly why the Nikkei has been enjoying such a good run, because they said that they would start to buy different asset classes. I think we'll come on to one of the reasons, perhaps, in another slide. But Richard, do you want to say something?
Yeah, just in terms of the timing of the introduction of QE, presumably just after the down 0.3. I mean, that certainly not spectacular growth, and as you say, it's been a fairly bumpy ride leading up to that, but nonetheless it was in positive territory. Obviously they've got the history of the lost decade and all the rest of it. I just wondered, in terms of the actual timing, why they decided it was the right time to jump in there and then.
Well, I mean, I just think, they're almost getting to a point of desperation, and it was all but the last roll of the dice. I think perhaps they felt they could see some signs of recovery with the program as it was pre-October, but so they effectively doubled it in October. And I think that maybe they felt that it was a question of scale, but I think perhaps, it might be having exactly the opposite effect. And in fact, almost, there's too much money now potentially in circulation, and it's actually having a negative feedback effect. But let's move on and have a look at the next slide. So the other thing that you would expect to see, and this, I think, has got a lot to do with it, is that if you or logic would dictate that if you're sticking in $60 billion a month into the economy, you would have thought it would stimulate inflation and create growth, but it isn't doing that. So we can see that it is possible to generate inflation in the Japanese economy, because they did it back in April 2014 when they introduced a sales tax, and you know, inflation spiked to 2.1% in that particular month. But that was just people just sort of running out and buying things ahead of the sales tax. Since then, it's been hovering around the zero line and spending quite a bit of time below that. And the forecast is for it to come back from deflation to about 0%, so to be the same sort of level that we are here in the UK. But until they can actually stimulate inflation and get demand in the Japanese economy going, I think, you know, they're on a hiding to nothing. Habits are perhaps changing, because Japan has always been a nation of savers, and there are suggestions that maybe people are starting to spend more money and be a bit less conservative in terms of saving for the future. But we, you know, 2% is the Bank of Japan inflation target. We're nowhere near that, and I don't think we're anywhere likely to hit it anytime, you know, in the next 6 to 12 months, is my own personal opinion. So if we move on again. So Japan is moving towards full employment, and it is, and you know, employment's around 3.2%, might get to be around 2.5%. That would probably be what most economists would consider, it probably already is actually what most economists would consider to be full employment. Japan's always had a very high employment rate, very low unemployment, for structural reasons, much anything else. What's noticeable though is as employment, or unemployment I should say, falls, industrial production that doesn't actually pick up. I mean, it did pick up here in 2013, but it peaked at the turn of 2014. And since then, it's very noticeable that as the employment numbers, or the unemployment numbers, fall, industrial production has been tailing off. So we're actually getting yet another diminishing return. We're not seeing the economy growing in terms. So are jobs being created just for job's sake? Is the question. And of course, on top of that, Japan's got very bad demographics. It's actually got a falling population, an aging population, and worst of all, from their point of view, a declining birth rate. With you know, young men seemingly uninterested in settling down, getting married, and having kids. And that's not a problem right now, but it could well be in 10, 15, 20 years' time. And that's you know, something else the market needs to think about. So, our last slide is just to sort of try and put that into context of the currency. So we came on and talked about, you know, the potential for dollar yen to weaken significantly right around here, just ahead of the Bank of Japan announcement. And obviously since then, it's done just that and tested up to and through 120. But that was a big move in and of itself. But let's just have a look at the longer term chart here, going all the way back to 1975. And you can see, you know, I'm not suggesting for a minute that we're going up there, but the current leg up, you know, the current week
is minuscule compared to the big picture.
Absolutely. So now we think about things like 120, 250, maybe 125, and perhaps, you know, 130 and 140. And so we could see a second round of yen weakness, but not for the reasons that the government and the Bank of Japan would like, but more for the on the basis of you know, of a potential currency crisis going forward, because this situation can't carry on indefinitely. There's one last taboo, I suppose, for the government and the Bank of Japan to consider, and that's to start monetizing some of this massive national debt, i.e. cancelling it, or, you know, printing more money to pay it down, if you will. They haven't crossed that bridge yet. No one's done that yet as far as QE is concerned. But if it's going to appear anywhere, if monetization is going to happen at all, it's possibly in Japan. And I think that could spook the market and, you know, see the yen weaken further still.
Right. OK. Darren, as always, you kick off Monday on Tip TV with thought-provoking stuff. That was very, very thought-provoking. I thought it was one-way traffic. I didn't realise behind the Nikkei record moves, okay, and yen weakness, this is going on, which that actually makes quite uncomfortable reading to me.
I think more people are going to wake up to that going.
Okay, thank you, Darren, market commentator for Admiral Markets. Let's take a very, very quick break, and then we're going to talk to Mr. Gaurav Sharma, an oil markets analyst at Sharecast Digital Look. His headline today: how should oil markets price in the Iran factor? I'm not sure that I'd ever be saying that on Tip TV this decade. We'll be straight back after the break. Thank you.